Hi, I'm Renata Bernardi, and this is the Job Hunting Podcast, where I interview experts and professionals and discuss issues that are important for job hunters and those who are working to advance their careers. So make sure that you subscribe and follow, and let's dive right in. Linda, the reason why I'm having you here today is because the interview format requires an understanding of body language and mirroring and you know, certain tone that some people never really practiced before. So for the listeners who are hearing about your work for the first time, how would you describe what you do?
So what I do, and hello to all the listeners, what I do is I travel around the world, and I actually have two areas of expertise of which I focus on. Many of my clients, they bring me in as one of the top sales experts in the world and as one of the top body language experts in the world. And that's my biggest focus. I focus on our original language. That's the language we were speaking before we were able to say a word. What do I mean? You know, as a baby, you weren't able to form words, even in primitive, well over 3,000 years, if you will. We weren't able to use language. So I focus on that nonverbal communication that's connected to the part of your brain, connected to our limbic system. And that's that part of the brain that actually protects us, called the amygdala. And so whatever you think about, it comes about. And that's why nonverbal communication is so important.
And when did you first start noticing body language? Do you remember a time when it started?
Oh, absolutely, Renata. I can give you the time. I was a youngster. I'm the oldest of four kids. And when you're the oldest, and by the way, if there are any firstborns out there, you can feel for me. Do you know, and I'm going to step to the side. You're a firstborn. I'm going to tell you this. Do you know that there was a study that was done that firstborn women have more stress than any other sibling, including firstborn male? So I have to say that in there to set up the story. So it started as a child, being the firstborn, and I was very, very, hyper energy. You know, I just, even to this day, I just have a lot of energy, love life, have a lot of energy. Why am I saying that? Because when I was young and in my day, you know, my parents had us going to bed early because we had to get up early for school, and they were very strict. Well, when it was time to go to bed, I wasn't ready to go to bed. So once everyone went to sleep, I waited, looked in their rooms just to be sure, and I began to watch television without the sound. And I would watch different movies until all of a sudden you get that signal where all the programming is gone. I would just laugh without hearing the sound. By the way, and I love silent movies. And it started there. I was able to do it. And I did it for 15 years because I was so in tune. Even when I went off to college, I did it because I was so in tune watching their body language. And then later on, I would put the closed caption on to see, oh, I was right. That's what they were saying. That's what they were doing. Oh my goodness, he's going to leave her. Oh my goodness, she's done with him. She doesn't want to be there. And it because of that, it got stronger and stronger and stronger. And then later on in life, I was able to get training by some of the top behavioral scientists and experts in the world, have an opportunity to mentor under them and train under them. And here I am. And so they say, some of my clients say, being one of the top nonverbal communications expert in the world, what I do is a little different. All of us out there, and there's, of course, one of the first experts out there in Australia, you know, that talks about body language. But what I do is a tad bit different. Most of us, when we're reading nonverbal communication, we all know the science. But most of us, when we're doing it, you're waiting for someone to move or sometimes not move based on a question. You're looking at facial expressions. You're looking at micro expressions, micro movements. But one of the things that I do, I can read the nonverbal when they're not moving or when they don't think that they're moving. So taking that extra layer, and people would say to me all the time, come here, can I ask you a question? You know, you just got off a stage and you had all those volunteers on the stage. Can I ask you, are you psychic? Are you clairvoyant? Are you highly intuitive? And they would ask me that because I would bring a group of people on stage when I'm doing a corporate presentation or a women's conference. And I would ask them to freeze. And then I would ask them a question one by one. And when I would ask the first person the question, Renata, I would notice that the second and third person would react, even though they were supposed to be still. And so I learned to peel the onion, and they're nonverbal. And here's for everyone listening and watching. It's very important. The moment that it comes into your mind, it shows up in the matter, being your body. So again, I started as a child and of course had some of the best training in the world and created my own methodology, if you will, in reading nonverbal communication.
That's amazing. You know, last weekend, the weekend before we're recording this, I did a 2-day posture workshop.
Wow.
With a very holistic professional. So I learned a lot from her about how things that have happened in our lives, the way that we were raised, you know, the culture, the education can affect the way that your posture develops over time, right? So the weight of responsibilities, you know, making you hunch, you know, and the anxieties that you have in life, or the happiness, and the way that you grow and develop as a body is so linked to the mind. And I hadn't thought of that, you know, and now I'm relearning how to walk and how to stand based on that workshop. So I'm wondering, you know, as well about what you can read from a person just by standing still. Is there anything that you can, just as an example, something that you observed in those people on stage?
Absolutely. And I want to add to what you just said. I want to add to that because there was one individual on stage. It was a female. She was the second person. I had three people on stage. And I'm asking the others questions. And then I come to her and I said, you can breathe. I said, I told all of you all to stand still, but you can breathe. And then I ask her this question. You're carrying a lot of weight. You are a caregiver for a female, either your mother or someone in your family. And she broke down crying. See, one side of the body represents, and maybe they might have shared with you, the feminine side. The other side represents the masculine. And she was tilted to the side as if I cannot go on. Because she was dealing with a parent that had dementia and not realizing that it was showing up. She was carrying the weight and it was showing up in her physical demeanor and in her posture. For those that are listening and watching, you know, whether it's a friend, a loved one, a coworker, or someone you admire or respect, or perhaps even disrespect, you can tell if they're going through something. Say something might have happened that was tragic or that they were sad. Well, the body, the posture, their upper carriage is not upright like walking proud. It may be the shoulders are, you know, pulled forward. The head may be down. These are things that are screaming at us without saying a word. So when I notice, and I just ask her the question, but notice the tone in which I'm doing it. And because the communication theory talks about the tone. So even the tone, I said, you know what? It looks like you are carrying a lot of weight.
Right.
And then I did a connecting gesture for those that are watching, did a connecting gesture. And my hand, I mean, when I say connecting gesture, for those that are listening, you're taking your hand and you connect it to your heart. So if I said to you, you and me, when I do the me, I'm pointing to you, but when I do the me, I touch my chest with the heart. So a connecting gesture, I did a connecting gesture and I said, it's someone close to you, someone dear to your heart. Is it your mother, an aunt, a sister? It's a female. And then she broke down. Part of it was the tone, because I was caressing her, hugging her, soothing her with the tone. And the gentleness, I did not go right in her proximics, meaning her space. I allowed the proper social distance. and the tilt of my head in the emotional realm to let her know whatever it is, I'm connecting with you. So here's what's so critical. These things are around us every day. They're around us every day. But in a world of social media, high tech, I mean, oh my goodness, seems like the high tech is replacing different roles and responsibilities. So you got to get on board, or other words, you'll be off the board, if you will. But I want you to know, for everyone out there listening, high tech will never, ever replace, at least in my lifetime, high touch. And when you have that presence, when you are 100% Renata present in another person's presence, not texting, not tweeting, not ordering food, not talking to someone when I'm supposed to be in your presence, when you are 100% present in their presence, that's when the magic begins to happen.
Linda, that's amazing. I 100% love what you just said. One of the situations that is very common with my audience is when they are looking for work. There's so many highly experienced, really great professionals looking for work right now. And they are really humbled by the job search. Right? It's very hard to get an interview. So they apply for lots and lots of jobs. They finally get an interview. They go to that interview. And I just wanted you to kind of imagine the situation where your body is showing the anxiety and the nervousness of being in that sort of really important situation where they could do well or not, absolutely, but they really want the job. What have you learned about how the body behaves under that sort of pressure that could hinder the chance of you getting the job, right? Just by the way that you present yourself in an interview.
That's an excellent question. And before I answer that question, let me give your audience some additional information. Let's say you've been struggling out there. I mean, it's a struggle. And you're thinking, I've got all kinds of degrees, but yet I'm still not getting the J-O-B. I've got this degree, that degree, but I'm not getting the J-O-B. And then finally, you get that call. Now, here's what you have to do prior to going in, and it's critical, because some people don't even think about this. One of the things you want to do, and I'm taking for granted that you do, especially if you're listening to this show, you do your homework well ahead of time. Know everything about your job prospect, know everything about their company, and if you have the opportunity to get intel on the person that's interviewing you, that's even better. So remember, you're the expert in what you do. You're proficient in what you do. So you know all that you do, but you want to know where you're going into. Now, why am I saying that? Because it took a while for you to get this interview. Man, it's been years. You know, your hair is growing on your resume. It's been so long. It's taken that long. So when you go in, if you are not prepared, when you are prepared, that gives you the confidence, the courage, and that allows you to have a commitment to win. And guess what? Guess what? You'll be calm because you have the information. You're equipped with the tools. You know what it takes. If you know about the interviewer, like, oh my gosh, the person that's interviewing me, they sit on XYZ board. They're part of this organization. They're active. So you've got things to build an instant rapport. And that alone allows you to be calm. Now, okay, now you're at the door. It was Stephen Covey that said, begin with the end in mind. How do you want this interview to go? How do you want them to feel when you leave their presence? Wow. Do you want them to feel like, hey, I don't need to interview anyone else? That's the right one. So when you begin with the end in mind, since the subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between falsehood and reality, then all of a sudden the brain begins to prepare yourself for the battle or the victory. So now you're in the interview. If you don't do what I'm recommending, and you're anxious and you're nervous, it can also come across as a little uneasy. It can also come across as a little desperate. I have to tell my salespeople out there that when they haven't had a sale in months or weeks, so it seems, then they begin to have commission breath. And when you're a little desperate, then all of a sudden your movements become a little assertive versus being cool, calm, collected, and committed with confidence and courage. You're sitting upright. You're sitting at the edge of your seat. I know you're taking notes. You cannot listen to this fabulous show and not take notes. So you're sitting at the edge of your seat straight up. Because remember, Renata went to that posture class with your core straight up. And by the way, a confident shoulders back, head level. When I say head level, your mom and dad used to say, hey, keep your chin up. Don't tilt your head back, but level. Looking at the interviewer, and you're sitting at the edge of your seat, which is called seat ready. And it allows you to sit at the edge and move from your core as if, you know, you're just like walking into that position. You are stepping into that position. If you come in exasperated and exhausted and sitting in the chair where you're hunchback like this, and then look, it doesn't even look like there's any excitement, any urgency about the job. But if you're sitting up straight with the foot, the lead foot, whether you're right or left foot, pointed towards the interviewer, feet are pointed in the direction that we want to go, then you can lean in, exposing your palms, being animated with the 43 facial muscles that you have, and smiling, great eye contact, and you're on your game. It is very, very important. You cannot walk in there in sheer desperation because it shows.
Yes, Linda, I love that. I had never thought about the where this you sit on the chair, you know, the sitting on the edge sounds such an obvious thing. One of the other things that is a real disappointment for candidates that are well prepared and walk into an interview very well prepared is when they notice the lack of nonverbal communications coming from the interviewers. Right? And this can happen for several reasons, Linda. Sometimes if you're interviewing 3, 4, 5 candidates in a row, you may have already fallen in love with a candidate that you've interviewed just, you know, the hour before. So because of that, the interviewer tends to shut down a bit and not make a lot of eye contact because they're thinking, I just need to go through these next interviews. I've already chosen my person.
And in my book, we talk about flat. They could just be flat, just neutral, just flat.
Just flat.
And you're thinking, I'm not getting any feedback. I'm not getting any energy. Yeah. I'm going to address that. I want to address that. Well, you've got some good questions. You should have your own podcast.
You should be a coach.
Going back to the posture, I want to bring this up because you said something in it and I forgot to mention it. For the women out there, and it could be for the men too, but specifically for the women, don't cross your legs because it distorts your posture. Don't cross your legs. You can lose circulation, if you will. Keep both feet flat on the floor and make sure that your seat ready. Now, let's say you're talking to that interviewer, he or she or they, that's a little flat. That you're saying, look, you're an animated person. Let's say you're a kinesthetic person, or let's say you're a visual person. So if you're a visual dominated learner, kinesthetic learner, if you're one of those, you're looking visually at everything. You're looking, oh, she's not smiling. He's not smiling. He didn't give me any validation. But what if that individual could be an introvert, or what if they are an analytical dominated communicator? So, and the way they perhaps maybe listen, they may listen where their focus constantly focused on you. Now, reason why this is important, you can cast judgment just because someone's not smiling or giving you validation. You can cast judgment and then you could turn the interview totally opposite. But here's what you can do. Remember what I said. Do your homework. Do your research. Find out everything you can about the company. And here's a little bonus. Find out everything you can about their competitor. You've got all that. You know it. And you know everything about the interviewer. You have to be able to get them at hello. When you get them at hello, they've been interviewing all day. You don't know if you're number one or number 10. And the first thing you do, if you're walking into the room and you notice the room, give genuine and authentic compliments. Okay? Because it allows them to exhale and you begin to build that instant rapport. What if they have something on their desk? And what if they're fraternal or sorority colors? What if they have something that you actually went to the same university? Now you have something to create a commonality. People like to talk to people that they have things in common with. But when you compliment, and I say genuine, don't tell someone they have a $1 million smile and they only got two little teeth in their head. Don't do that. But when you do a genuine compliment or acknowledgement, that's the thing that shifts their mode. Because guess what? They have to change their expression to say, oh, thank you. Mm. And that starts it right there.
Mm, that's wonderful. I love that. Okay, I have another great question for you, I think. It's an important one. It's the fact that they get into an interview and they have practiced what we call the behavioral questions. So the STAR questions. Tell me about a time when you had to deal with a complex issue. Tell me about a time when you had to, manage this sort of type of project. These are questions that my clients, my listeners as well, may feel very comfortable answering because it's their area of expertise, right? But the first questions in an interview are never those questions. The first questions on an interview are, tell me about yourself.
Yes.
Why did you leave your last organization? Why do you want this job? So especially the why did you leave your last organization, when they've been laid off or fired or something, it's a very tricky question to answer. And I am assuming that if they over-practice it, but they're not... they're not honest about it.
Right.
It comes out weird.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if they're not honest about it, you may say it in the words, but the nonverbal is going to show it. So here's what you've got to do. Let's say you left your job unhappy. And here's what you want to remember. At that particular time, I left my last company because at that particular time, at that moment, I was seeking other greater opportunities where I can utilize my skills and my talents. The great benefit that I received from that company when I started. See, you can be mad. Just like when people get a divorce. When people tell me, I'm getting a divorce, I'm done. So you got a divorce from your last company. But what was it about the company that made you fall in love with them and say yes in the first place? So the way you do that politically, because you don't want the interviewer to think, well, gosh, if things don't go well with us, will they go out and badmouth us? So I left it so that I can continue to grow. I've outgrown my talents and skills there. And what I did learn from working with the company is this, and now I want to be able to see how I did that without being nasty, if you will. So there are ways to be able to do it, but it has to be genuine and authentic. Let me just quote the study by Dr. Maharabian, because I know there's some analyticals out there. It says, oh, what's the science behind all this stuff? There was a study that was done well over 50 years ago out of UCLA by Dr. Maharabian. It's called the communication theory. Now, in his study, because, it's a new day and time. It's over 50 years ago. But let's take the study and just make it relevant right now. In his study, he found that our words are 7% of our communication. 7%. So if you think about that, I want to challenge you with this question. Are the words that are coming out of your mouth, are they powerful or powerless? Poison or potent? Passionate or passive? Do you know just saying the word cancer is feared in over 12 languages? Once the words are out, you cannot retrieve them. And one of the things that I tell my clients and my students, that the words that are coming out of your mouth, do you want them to motivate, empower, elevate, equip, transform? Do you want the person to be better or bitter? So your words are critical. And what if we don't speak the same language? Wow, 7%. In the study, they found that 38% of our communication is tonality. You might have heard this saying, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. But I beg to differ. It's not just what you say and how you say it, Renata, it's what they hear. It's what they hear. So if I said, I saw Steve and Sandy at the mall the other day and they were alone, big deal, Linda. But if I said it like this, I saw Steve and Sandy at the mall the other day and they were alone. Wow, just from the tone, you don't have to be looking at me. You don't have to be watching me right now. Just from the tone, you could create a narrative, oh, something going on with Steve and Sandy. Just from the tone, 7% words, 38% tonality. And according to that study, 55% of our communication is nonverbal. So why is that important? It's the part of your brain called the amygdala, also known as the truth brain, houses a lot of emotions. And you might have heard the phrase, and that drives me nuts, fake it till you make it. My new phrase is the fake will fade, because the truth brain, no matter what your words say, if it's not truthful, we'll send it in the real language. It's your body language. So watch this. So Linda, what do you think about the new director, your new boss? What do you think about the new VIP? Do you like him? Now watch, now you heard the words. Watch this. Mm-hmm. He's okay. She's okay. Uh-oh, what did you notice? I said the words. He's okay. She's okay. Or what if I said, yeah, they're okay. Yeah, I like them. Anytime, see, but the word said yes, but what did my body say? Anytime you see asymmetrical movements, like the shoulder shrug I just did, it cancels out the verbal. So one of the things you can practice, but unless you are an Oscar-winning actor, a good actor, method trained, it's more likely your gestures, you don't practice with your words. You only practice the words. So it has to be in you. And I'm going to give everyone a little acronym so they can remember. Very important, because you could have left your last job, bad circumstance. You know, just it was a, you know, we respectfully had a disagreement. It just didn't work. And I thought it's best that I move on to be able to explore my talents. If it's not T, so here's your word, tap, T-A-P, think of tap dance. If it's not truthful, if it's not authentic, which is the letter A, then it won't show up in the P, which is the proof. So when you are truthful and authentic, it shows up in the proof.
Linda, I think that the difficulty that people have with the TAP framework, truthful, authentic, purposeful, which is 100% behind you, is that a lot of people in the corporate world feel like they need to present without vulnerability. They need to present without doubt, without, you know, they need to play cool. They need to be the cool, collected person that has that aura of confidence and skills and leadership. It's an old-fashioned way of thinking about it. I get it. But because I work with professionals that are older, that's how they were raised to be as corporate professionals. It's kind of new now for us to be vulnerable, for us to open up. And it affects their understanding of their executive presence. Executive presence is now a very loaded term, right? Because it is an important thing to have. However, if it's misunderstood in the world, it can also mean we only look for candidates that fit in this sort of format, right? That there's no diversity in executive presence for some, right? So it's kind of difficult for them to have that conversation. So they prefer to lie with their words and their bodies rather than acknowledge the challenges in their careers, and they may not know how to do that in a way that maintains their executive presence. I hope I'm making sense. I'm just sort of thinking out loud here with you.
No, you're doing fine. There was a saying, oh, what a tangled web we weave when we try
That's exactly right.
To see.
Yeah.
And so let me just tell you what takes place and the stress that goes on in your body. And I want to let you know, the leaders that have the greatest impact on me, I don't get excited how you stand with the great. I get excited when you're able to kneel with the least of them. So it's not just being vulnerable. What it is, your people, your team, the people that you're going to lead or manage, they want to know that you are human. Because if you're perfect, then I'm going to question what your EQ is like, your emotional intelligence. So it's not just showing or demonstrating for the men out there listening and the women vulnerability. It's showing that you do possess at least an ounce of humanity. What did you do as a leader when you made a mistake? Mm. That's what they're watching. Remember the saying, action speaks louder than words. People don't want to hear the sermon, as my granny would say, they want to see it. So it's not just what you say, it's how you show up and how you take responsibility and how you have a level of sensitivity, how you're able to empathize and feel compassion. Because let me ask you this, for those that want to make sure they've got the executive presence and that they're perfect, is there anyone on earth that's perfect? Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you this question. Do you want to work for someone who's perfect? Because they will remind you of the things of your imperfections and the areas where you show weakness. So people like connecting and following leaders who are real. And yes. So you show up your professional self, your proficient self, your competent self. That shows up because when you're competent in confidence, it's in your language, it's in your movement, your words, your tone, your nonverbal, they're congruent. When you have passion about something, you're speaking with that dominant hand, you're emphasizing, you're punctuating. When you're unsure, unconsciously, non-consciously, you use the other hand to be able to emphasize. Oh my goodness. So you want to show up competent and knowing that the areas that you do know and proficient in, let them know. And the areas that, you know what, that's not my strength. And that's an area that I've been working on, and let them know. Because guess what? Again, the fake will fade, family. It will fade.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. I know we don't have a lot of time left, but I didn't want to finish without addressing what you describe as frozen, flooding, and flat. Okay. Can you explain to the audience what that means?
Yes.
Those emotional barriers.
Yes. So frozen is like, have you ever come up on someone and you're talking to them and they're just like a statue? There's no movement. They're frozen. It's like no life, no energy. And lots of times people who are going through something, a mild depression, people who are disconnected, people who are done. As a matter of fact, there was a study that is done that a person who has made up their mind to commit suicide, there's a momentary time when they make up their mind, they've already pictured it, they become frozen. When you're disconnected and you're about to leave the job, you're done. You could become frozen. So there's no heat. There's no warmth. There's no energy coming from that person when they're simply frozen. It's like, hello, is anyone home? Are you there? Oh yeah, I'm sorry. I was somewhere else, frozen. Flooding happens when you've got, and you mentioned it earlier, you know, I've been out here struggling, looking for a job, something in my area. This has happened, going on with my family, expenses, everything is happening. And then all of a sudden, perhaps they ask you a question in the interview. that could be an emotional trigger.
Mm.
When that emotional trigger happens, it's going to happen for men and women. And many of you might have experienced it in your personal life when someone is going through so much and they hold it in because they're trying to be strong. And then all of a sudden you'll say to them, I'm here. Are you okay? Is everything okay? Is everything going okay with your home, family? And they start flooding. Everything comes out. All the emotions, all this, all the words, stories, disjointed. And it's just the floodgates are open. Yeah. And when that happens, especially in an interview, it can make the interviewer uneasy because it may come across is that you do not have discipline or mastery or control over your emotions. And that is, imagine someone and who speaks, you notice that my vocal tone goes up and down, my tone changes, but someone who is flat in their communication and their energy, their words often sound like this. So Linda, are you excited about the job? Yeah, I'm really excited about getting started. Can I ask you, when do I get my first vacation? And, do I get a corner office? It's just no energy. No fire, no life. It's just flat. Imagine your favorite dish without all the herbs and seasoning. And then you taste it and it's flat. And we could come across like that without all the fire, the energy, or the personality seasonings, if you will.
I love that. And the thing about working for a long tenure in an organization, let's say you start off really young and you've been in the same organization for 10, 15, 20 years, being frozen, flooding, or flat is not a problem for you because people may know that you're good at your job and they will say, yeah, that's just, how she is, but she's excellent at her job. So people put that aside because they know that you are a master at what you do. When you go into the workforce, you lose your job, you cannot have frozen, flooding, or flat demeanor in an interview. So all of that stuff that has been neglected and you haven't received feedback about now is the problem during an interview situation. When I was consulting with a recruitment company, executive search company, so it was senior levels, and I said, oh, guess what? This wonderful woman just lost her job. I know her really well. She's super senior. Let's get her for a conversation. I think you're going to really like her as a candidate for your clients. And I was very new to this, and she came and she just flooded everybody. Like, she was so, so emotionally hurt by the, it was too soon. I learned a lesson from that, as a coach, never to put people in this, on the spot before their time. Give them self permission to feel human with their friends and their mentors before they are in front of a recruiter. It was too soon for her. Yeah. But I see a lot of flat people as well. People that have, especially depending on the profession as well. If they've been in-house working as, let's say, accountants or, very internal roles, they're not very used to going out into the market, talking to people, because unlike the people that you train who are sales professionals, they're always out there talking to people. There are some people that work in-house and they're usually more flat because that's how they perceive to be a professional demeanor.
Well, so, you said something. Oh, you said a couple of good things. I don't want to miss it. at one of the companies that I worked for, what was so interesting, their CFO was flat, but everyone got their bonuses, their checks. He was brilliant at what he did. And then one of the employees went out to the weekend, they went out with some friends to the club. And they saw the CFO in a band, a rock band, totally shocked, totally shocked. She couldn't get it out of her head. This flat person had another side, but they were only able to see the one side. So remember, you said something earlier when someone has been working in a company a long, long time and you know, oh, that's just Harry, that's just Linda, that's just Sally, that's just that individual. Well, what that is called baseline. You know the person's baseline. So if a person comes to work every morning, makes the coffee, singing the same old tune, that's their baseline. If they, you know, have a routine, the way they do their papers or the way they talk, or they're up doing their presentations, maybe they crack their knuckles. That's their baseline. What if their baseline that when you go in for your review, you're, you know, and they don't look at you, but you know, that's their baseline. You're not taking it personal. He's not, or she's not looking at anyone else. But what happens if you leave the company, like Renata said, you leave the company and now you're going somewhere else with those same baselines. They don't know. It takes 4 to 8 seconds, 4 to 7 seconds. I'm going to give you an extra second to make that good first impression. So if I'm going into an interview, let's say Renata sent me on this interview and I'm excited and it was a great referral and I'm excited about the job, but say it's your old company and I go in and the next thing you know, I'm talking to different people of the team. I'm talking to the director of marketing, director of sales, talking to the lead manager, whoever it may be. And then I meet this one guy. I'm going to use my brother's name, David. I'm talking to David. Everyone else was just open and they kind of match my personality. I'm thinking, I'm going to get the job. Then I meet this guy named David. And David says, okay, tell me about yourself. I begin to tell him about myself. And then he cuts me off. And then he asks me the same question again. Then I begin to tell him about myself. He cuts me off again. Then he picks up the phone. He picks up his phone and he starts ordering food. He said, by the way, hold the mail, doing all of this. And he says, and then he does dismissal. So go ahead, go look at my hand. Go ahead with your story. And then after that, he was done. Okay, I got to get back to work. I'm leaving. So just think about this. I'm walking out of there feeling deflated. So I called Renata, says, look, I don't know if I got the job or not. I met all the people that you talked about, but this David, I don't think he likes me. So Renata says, Linda, what happened? Oh my gosh, I go in there to meet him, introduce myself. He asked me a question, cut me off, did it twice. Then right in the middle of the conversation, starts ordering food. And because it's your old job, you said, Linda, it's not you. That's David. But how in the heck am I supposed to know David's baseline? And that's the same with you. If you leave that company carrying that baseline, and you brought up an excellent point. If no one has given you constructive, caring, critical feedback, your norm, what you do as a habit, you may think it's okay, and it may turn someone else off. Because now you're taking those habits and taking it to the new job, and it's not working. It's not working. And you are missing an opportunity and don't know why. You didn't get them at hello. So it's very important what you said. Well, because once you leave, when you leave, guess what goes with you? You and your habits and all the other stuff.
Yes, I always tell my clients that you have total control when you are in the room with them. Once you walk off, then that's it. There's not much else that you can do. So make the most out of it. Address all the elephants in the room. Linda, it's time to go. I can't believe it because I have so many questions for you. We have to do this again in the future.
About my book? You want to talk about my book?
Yes. Well, we will have a link to your book in the episode show notes. Tell us about your book.
Yes, I'm so excited. Many of my clients over the last 4 decades, I said 4 decades, you all thought I was 25. Good. I love you already. But over the last 4 decades, my clients from all over the world, it says, you've got to put some of this knowledge in the book. Otherwise, when you leave this earth, it'll go with you. And I thought, man, that hit. And my book is coming out nationwide, internationally, on January the 6th. And the title of the book is Hush, How to Radiate Power and Confidence Without Saying a Word.
Yes! Yeah, that's so exciting. I'm so happy for you. I keep thinking about writing a book, but I'm too lazy, Linda. I'm not organized enough.
Dictate it. That's what I did. The whole year, I just talked my thoughts, and it'd be easy for you. And then you have a good editor that'll put it all together.
Oh, wonderful. Look, I think it's a great book for the type of audience that we have on the Job Hunting Podcast. We will have a link below. By the time this episode goes out, the book will already be on sale. And for those of you who are planning to buy the book, and this happens a lot, people come on the podcast because they have a book and people tell me, oh, I bought the book. If you buy Linda's book, please go and leave a review. There's nothing more important than a review, right? Yes, go to wherever you bought it, usually Amazon, and write a review for Linda's book. Linda, thank you so much for coming and talking to us today.
Thank you so much.